Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Tia Powell. She is the director at the Center of Bioethics at Montefiore Medical Center. She's an expert in dementia and has a book that's coming out, Dementia Reimagined. Tia, thanks for joining me today.
I'm happy to be here.
So let's kick off, focusing on this challenging healthcare problem that we have. I think there can't be anybody that doesn't or hasn't heard the term dementia. We probably sort of think of it fearfully. Tell us what you can about the disease, what we know about it, where you think we are in terms of the research and treatment, if you could.
I would love to talk about that. So first, I'll just say, when I say dementia, I include all the different kinds of dementia. That includes Alzheimer's disease, which many people are familiar with, but there are quite a number of other types of dementia too that sometimes get swept into the rubric of Alzheimer's, but there are differences there too. So I'll just sort of put that out because people often ask, what's the relationship between dementia and Alzheimer's? So dementia really starts to be thought of as an illness relatively recently, even though it's been around as long as there have been people. But it really kind of takes some interest in the 1970s for a lot of complicated reasons, but including that we had better scientific instruments, better ways of imaging the brain, really smart people started to look at this. But despite our efforts, and we've really learned a lot about dementia and put a lot of money into studying it since the 70s and kind of increasing sometimes a little bit, sometimes a lot in terms of funding, there's still a lot we don't know. And the kind of, bummer piece of this is that we have absolutely no therapy that can prevent, can slow down, or can cure dementia. And actually, one thing I might like to mention to your listeners is that if somebody tells you they have a cure for dementia, you need to run the other way. The best thing you can invest in is not some, brand new supplement or some cure. Get yourself a good pair of walking shoes and walk away from the person who's telling you that. That will do much more for your, cognitive health than taking the supplement.
I was just going to say that the exception to that, certainly in my understanding, is exercise is probably the best thing that you could do, including obviously good health and diet, but absolutely exercise.
That's the only proven thing. So, basically things that your grandmother might have told you still remain true. You should eat healthfully, you shouldn't sit on your couch all day, and you should, get out and about and use your brain. And that should help. It certainly can't hurt you. And some of the other remedies that are sort of kicking out about there probably could actually do some damage. So, but unfortunately, because the science has, not for lack of trying and not for smart people really working on it, we really don't have anything. And here, while I'm being, Nancy negative, there's unlikely to be a cure in time for the baby boomers. So if you just look at the brain pathology that's related to Alzheimer's disease, these amyloid plaques and tau tangles, we really know that that type of pathology starts at least 10 years, maybe as much as 20, before you start to have symptoms. It also takes a good 10 years or so to get any kind of medication through the testing and trial process. And although you can work to speed that up a little, you can't do it too much because you need to make sure that any drug that could be so broadly used as one for dementia is safe, and you can't speed the safety checks. So here, if you're a baby boomer, your brain's been doing what it's doing for the last 20 years, even if you don't have symptoms, you've got to wait another 10 before there's anything. And by the way, even though medicine has made huge progress, certainly in my lifetime, and I'm in my early 60s, I refuse to divulge the actual number, still, most of the things that we can do much better, it takes several different sorts of intervention. So when we have a big win over cancer, and we're starting to do that, usually it's radiation plus a couple of different drugs, plus surgery, plus a bunch of things. That's how we've beaten AIDS in large measure. We have several different medications. So for dementia, and specifically Alzheimer's, we've got nothing. We really have nothing that even makes a dent in it. We have some palliative medications that can sort of help with symptoms for some people for a little bit of time, but no one argues that the medications we now have really even kind of make a bend in the trajectory of the illness.
So I think it's true to say that that's despite huge amounts of focus, attention, resources, investment in attempting to sort of tease out what's going on.
Absolutely. I mean, increasing investments, and I'm not opposed to that. Listen, I'm a physician. I want to see science do its job. I also, however, am a realist. We have probably 6 million people with dementia just in the US today. And that number will only grow over the next 10 to 20 years. We live so much longer. And older age is the single biggest risk factor for dementia. So we're not getting rid of this problem. We're not going to sort of come up with a magical solution that suddenly cures dementia. And indeed, for people with advanced symptoms, as far as I know, there's not even any research in how to turn dementia around at that phase. Those neurons are dead. They're not coming back. So we have a lot of people who are currently ill, more to come. And my emphasis is not to stop science and not to stop looking for a cure, but to really take seriously the question of what does good care look like? Because we're not going to science our way out of that. We're going to have to take care of people. And we're not really doing as good a job, again, despite many good people working on this, that could use some more money for research, for resources, for thinking about what does a good nursing home look like? We can't get around the need for those. What would that look like? Clearly, we have many around the world and certainly in the States that don't meet that definition. They're not places where you would want to be, where a loved one would want to be. Some are, but how can we get more of that? How can we fund it? What do we do? And what can you do that's not a nursing home? So that's what I'd like us to think about.
So I want to just pull out from the thread. I think, you know, if I was to pick on the incremental approach in terms of addressing, you know, the challenge of, you know, facing off dementia, go out, exercise, pay attention to your grandmother's advice. I think I love that. Generally, that's true. But as we, you know, think about this just in the context of reality, and, you know, let's be clear, I don't think this is anything negative. This is truth. And I think it's important to accept that. And I think that's exactly what you're trying to focus on within your book, Dementia Reimagined. So share a little bit about your thinking around how we go about dealing with this essentially growing problem, especially as the silver tsunami washes through the generations and then starts to age, given that age is directly related to incidence in this case.
I think the incremental approach is incredibly important here. One of the things I'd really like people to do is stop being so terrified of dementia. So I'd really like to start with people who are fine now. Maybe they're middle-aged, maybe they're not yet. And try and find out why is it that dementia is the illness that Americans fear most. I think we are fiercely independent. We hate the notion of being dependent on other people. People who are smart love to hang on to that part of themselves. It's so important. And, you know, I mean, I'm a snob about being smart. I like to think I am. I went to medical school. You know, that's a huge part of my identity. But if you just could do a small thing, it would be to rethink that approach. We started out, you know, when you were a baby, you wore nappies and nobody thought the worst of you for it. There's nothing that makes somebody less of a person because they need the help of other people, because they have some disabilities, even because you have incontinence, you know, because you need to wear a diaper, which is one of the most embarrassing, stigmatized aspects of end-stage dementia. So think about what it would be for you to be more frail than you are today and to be okay with that. Sort of the original title for the book actually was Try a Little Tenderness. And I changed it because I didn't want people to think I was beating up on those who are already taking care of people with dementia. But what I really meant is try a little tenderness towards your future self. Think of yourself as older and a little bit more frail. And what would that person need to feel some joy in their life? Because every life should have joy in it. So begin to think about a happy life, some form of happiness that could be part of dementia. So I actually think our fear of dementia has kept people from thinking about what to do, has made our policies kind of stunted and inadequate, and has kept us from sort of bringing our best attention or best efforts to think about this will be the reality. It's the reality today for millions of Americans and millions more who take care of people with dementia, and it's not going away. So what would it take to make that life better? How could you imagine it? So that incremental step, just a kind of thought experiment, I think is actually potentially revolutionary. You could begin to think about what's in your community. Do you have a community garden? It might be a lovely place for somebody with dementia just to be able to sit and look at plants and flowers. You know, you don't necessarily have to do anything. You can just sort of observe the butterflies are over there on that bush. Do you have places where somebody could walk? Do you have sidewalks that are usable for somebody with a walker? I mean, I think it just helps to begin with sort of small things, looking about you in your community and see what we can do from there.
So it's interesting, you know, as you talk about that, I think about the sort of acceptance, it's a bit like, you know, we talk about grief and, you know, I think people try and impose that sort of seven stages on lots of things. But, you know, one of the first things in many instances is just, you know, acceptance of, hey, this is happening, and then moving on to, you know, how you approach it. And you talked a little bit about the elderly care and how we incorporate that. And I know that there's a wide variation both in this country, but also outside. What have you seen? And more importantly, what's good? I mean, what should we be looking for as we start to think about that from a future perspective?
I think there's some really interesting efforts that are going forward. I mean, one thing, I don't want to pick on the nursing homes because they actually do get picked on a lot and we need them. But they're institutions. Mm. And the thing about institutions is that even when good people are there, they kind of start to fill the needs of the people who work there, particularly when all the people who live there are quite vulnerable, may not be able to articulate their needs very well, certainly aren't going to get organized and, you know, foment revolution. But that's a problem. So that there are some great facilities that have said, what could we do to make the people who are here with us not feel like prisoners? Well, we don't have to tell somebody who worked hard all their life and now they're 92 and have dementia, you have to get up when I tell you. You know, literally as if they were prisoners or in the army. I'm in charge here. You know, I don't care if you, you know, worked your fingers to the bone taking care of your family and community for decades. I'm in charge now. So thinking about what does a good home look like in a nursing home? You know, can you let people have some flexibility in what they eat and when they eat? Can you, you know, one of the great things that's happened in nursing home design in the last 20 years or so is that people with dementia often are agitated. They might like to wander. They like to walk around and they also get lost. So when I was a medical student, it was still in the era where you would go to a nursing home and you'd see people tied to their chair, right? You can't walk, you're gonna fall down, that's terrible. Mm. So I think we've hugely cut down on tying people anywhere these days, but that was absolutely a common thing 30, 40 years ago. But what we do now is a lot of nursing homes are designed so that's kind of a circular setup. Go walk, you'll end up right back where you were. You can't get lost, you're fine here. It's also a tragic thing that in some older nursing homes, there are people come in there and may never have actually been outside for 30 years, which is just a horrible thing to think about. I mean, again, that's what you do in the worst of circumstances with prisoners. And actually, I don't think most prisons would get away with that these days. So there are nursing homes that are really building in kind of safe outdoor spaces. Some of them have really quite lovely little walled gardens where they only lock the doors when the weather is really outrageous. But other than that, you walk up, the door opens, you can go out, it's very safe, you can use a walker there, it's easy to move about, there are benches to sit, and you can actually Just feel the sun on your face if you want to. It's the simplest thing, but it's hugely part of, it's a, it nonetheless symbolizes an enormous change in thinking about what is the life that you would like for yourself or for someone else who is, has dependencies, does need help with daily living, really cannot live alone, needs maybe to be in an institution, but what could make it more home-like and less institutional?
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the incrementalist, and today I'm talking to Dr. Tia Powell, director at the Center for Bioethics at Montefiore Medical Center. We were just talking about nursing homes and, you know, obviously the challenge that I think they face. And, you know, I always come from the premise of trying to put myself in the shoes of, you know, the different side or the opposing view, not that I see them as opposing, but, you know, you mentioned earlier that there's certainly some negativity around that. I think people have been challenged with their ability to deliver care and be compassionate. But the reality is it's a really hard job, right? I mean, looking after somebody with dementia is tough because unlike the baby example that you gave and, you know, the issue of incontinence, which is obviously one of those sort of central things that we are concerned about, being incontinent as an adult and being, you're suddenly mobile and stronger. So it creates all of these additional challenges. So, you know, in recognition of that, I think it's important to understand that they're not sort of, you know, everybody's trying to do, I think everybody tries, the intention is to do good. And you were just talking about the sort of outdoor spaces. And to me, that sort of step is just a design thing. It's an incremental design that says, hey, let's build these places in a way that sort of makes sense. So maybe it's, you know, a circular facility, as you described, and the central light well, as we've seen in some of the offices. Tell us about some of the other things that you've seen in terms of design and capabilities that improve that interaction and engagement in these nursing homes.
Well, there are some models that are really emphasizing small nursing homes. So that's one sort of innovation. I think it's challenging in terms of staffing and finances, but not impossible. There's one very popular model called the greenhouse model. But there are other attempts to do similar things where you might have a group of only 10 or 12 people, all on one level, either in a single kind of facility in a more rural area or stacked, you know, if you're in an urban area. So you could have a floor with 10 or 12 rooms, you know, one on top of the other for several floors going in an urban area. And in those, there's a kind of central kitchen living room area. And just as in a kind of, you know, kind of a funny family, you'd have some staff, but instead of having what's typical in the healthcare system is everybody has quite a rigid and predetermined role. Here, people have a lot more flexibility. So the same person who gives out medications might be the person who's going to work on supper. And in fact, the people who live there, the residents, are also encouraged to come and help put on supper. If you can have a three-year-old try and chop the carrots, I don't know why you can't have somebody with reasonably advanced dementia come and help you do that, or set the table, or wash the lettuce, or do something. So there's much more of a sense of community and smallness, and everyone eats together at a single table because it's a small enough group. Moreover, some of these facilities will let you stay there through many, many different phases of dementia. So you could come in, maybe still able to walk, but stay there until the very final terminal phase. Now that's where the super small facility gets tough because there's a natural life cycle of dementia. If you suddenly have a facility of 10 people and all 10 are bedbound and can no longer help wash the lettuce, can no longer participate in activities, you really need a different kind of staffing arrangement than you did 10 years earlier when half of those people could walk and could, you know, play Wii tennis or, you know, go about and put in bulbs in the garden and that kind of thing. So it's very tricky to figure out how you're going to keep up with staffing needs as people get older and sicker, which is very much the point of nursing homes. Once you come in, that is typically your final residence. So I think that's some of the innovation. I think thinking about what palliative care means for dementia is really important. It's certainly not just about medications, although that's quite important. A person with dementia is likely to be an older person, is likely to be a person with lots of other illnesses, and may have a lot of physical pain, and they can't really tell you that. They can't tell you what hurts or where or how often. So we probably have been quite stingy in pain control with people with dementia. So thinking about that's really important, but thinking about other ways of comforting people with dementia is also incredibly important. It used to be that as soon as somebody got agitated or angry or anything like that with dementia, we slapped them with antipsychotic drugs, which are quite powerful, which still may have some appropriate use. There are people with dementia who have hallucinations. This could be a very appropriate treatment for that. But what you used to do is just sedate the living daylights out of people, and then you're back to the person tied in the chair. That should never today be our first line. So there are lots of really interesting innovations where people are working with pets, trying to, you know, somebody's agitated, can you distract them? Can you play music? Can you do something that sort of changes the channel and helps somebody become calm and become soothed? And there's some really interesting interventions. One that's actually, it's odd to me to say it, it's a little bit controversial. Some people use dolls. So older people, both men, but certainly men too, but certainly women, really respond to baby dolls. They love dolls. They love sort of nursing the doll and hanging out with the doll. And there's also fake pets, you know, fake kitties and dogs and stuff. And some people object to this. They think it's infantilizing. They think you oughtn't to do that. The person may think it's a real baby. I mean, I can't, you know, words cannot express. If it doesn't hurt anybody else and it makes you feel better, help me understand why that's a bad thing. And by the way, the alternative is a powerful antipsychotic medication, which is A, more expensive, and B, worse care, because that will lead to somebody falling over and getting the broken hip, which really sort of leads for older people to the final downhill slide. It's sort of an unrecoverable error and injury.
Yeah.
So I think there's simple things we can do that do actually increase joy and change the way we think about what good care looks like for people who have dementia.
Yeah, so it's fascinating. I mean, I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think, you know, this sort of preconceived notions, and if you go back far enough in time, you find that all of our preconceived notions have been reversed and changed. And, you know, I couldn't agree more. You know, finding the right things versus sort of necessarily chemical interventions, although, you know, if they're appropriate, that's fine. We're running out of time, but I wanted to maybe just with what we have left, any thoughts about the possibility? Because one of the things that I've said, and I believe to be true, is that nobody comes in with the sense of, I want to die in a hospital, nursing home, whatever. I'd like to die in my own home if that's where I, you know, at some point that's going to happen. Is this possible? Is there, do you think there's the potential to be able to allow people in these disease states to age and do so gracefully and safely?
I do think so. I mean, in the book, I speak of my own mother's experience, but just as a general matter, I think we need to reevaluate what kinds of medical interventions are actually useful and helpful for somebody who has the fatal illness of dementia. So in my own mother's case, she developed a heart arrhythmia when she had severe dementia, and the cardiologist was totally pumped up about giving her a pacemaker. So her mother had had a pacemaker and dementia, and my grandmother's six children really regretted until their dying days that they ever did that. It meant that she lived to the bitter end, and what good that did her, we'll never know. So I think we need to rethink invasive things, things that prolong dying rather than prolong life. And if you just focused on palliative care, I think you could keep many more people at home. And I think you're right, people want that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, this you know, partly it's built into the medical educational system that, you know, anything short of total getting in there and fixing problems is failure. And of course, that's not the case. So I think very eloquently put, so important. So unfortunately, as is often the case, we've run out of time, but I truly have enjoyed this conversation and want to thank you, Tia, for joining us and sharing some of your insights and, you know, indeed, the opportunity to read the book, Dementia Reimagined. I would encourage those of you that think about this to go out, get a copy.
I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.